Rebic, Rafa, tira, gol! Rafael Leão, oggi segna Leão, la mia giornata è iniziata così.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher, joined by the best pappy ever, Anthony Torgroot.
What's up guys, glad to be back. We got the return of Madison with us this week.
Yeah, it's been a couple weeks. It's been a great couple weeks, but it feels good to be back.
A good couple of weeks not doing the podcast, which says a lot about how our own hosts feel about
well, I mean,
the situation going into this one.
Any couple of weeks I don't have to see you guys is, you know, good in my opinion.
Yeah, well said. Right, so, boys, we support a problematic football team is the conclusion I think we've all just about reached over the last few days. We got a busy episode. It's back to that time of the year where there's two games to recap, two games to preview. Always action-packed to these episodes, so it's good to have three of us for this one. And the annoying thing, and I don't like doing this, but we've got to do it, is that we have to start with a win, but we're all really fired up after the game that we saw yesterday, which obviously did not go to plan. But let's start on a positive note where we can recap our first win in the Champions League since 2013-14 season. We went to Atletico Madrid, the defending La Liga champions, who, as we know, also needed the 3 points to boost their chances.
Do we not do the transition?
If you want. I thought that was more for previews and stuff, but yeah, throw it in.
Okay, well, I mean...
I thought it was only for previews.
Okay, yeah, then we'll just continue. No. I'm sorry, I'm wrong.
It's weird because it's the first one to recap, so it's thrown me off a bit. But yeah, they also needed the 3 points to try and get themselves in a good position going into the last match day when they face Porto. We came away with a 1-0 win. Not only a 1-0 win, but the Messias agenda is in full flow. AJ must have enjoyed that.
Yeah, I was real happy, and I'm sure everyone was, but me for more reasons than one. I've been on the Messias hype train since really the first time we got linked with him. There was, I believe... He signed like August 30th.
And deadline day.
Yeah, it was deadline day. And like 4 or 5 days prior to that, I think it was like the 27th, there was a very brief linking to him. And everyone was all fired up about it. And I was like, look, he's not that bad, actually. Like, his stats are better than Castillejo. Like his one season with Crotone, he had more goals and assists than Samuel has in his entire Serie A career. And I was like, that's pretty telling if we're just trying to upgrade this position. Plus, he's versatile. He played the right center mid for them and then attacking mid for us and now right wing. And I was like, and he's doing better than Alexis, who's been arguably pretty bad lately, but obviously in hindsight, didn't know that at the time. But I was like, I think it'll be pretty good. And then the next day it was like, oh, he was offered to us. We weren't really interested. I was like, oh, okay, no big deal, whatever. And then we signed him and, you know, chaos ensued. And I was still excited, and then I made a bet with Isaac that he would score 5 goals in all comps, and one down, four to go.
Yeah, yeah. And do you know what? In a game where there isn't an awful lot else to talk about, because it wasn't exactly... it was end-to-end, but without much quality. And I think that we benefited from the fact that Atletico are perhaps not at their most confident. You know, they had a really good season last season. They took advantage of Real Madrid and Barcelona being in a little bit of internal chaos and managed to win La Liga. Fair play to them. But I think Simeone is still experimenting a bit with systems and with players. And they haven't really hit the ground running. Like, they're fourth in the league, which is obviously a bit of a drop-off from first. They've won only one Champions League group game, and that was against us when, let's face it, if the referee was different, they wouldn't have won that. And then, yeah, they got beat at home 1-0 by us. But Messias was the game-changer, Maddie.
Yeah, I think that we controlled most of the game. There was not a lot of quality in the final third for either team, but man, that goal was picture perfect. Mm. He jumped and it just looked like in slow motion, just lofted the ball right into the net.
Yeah.
Yeah. It reminded me of the Ronaldo goal that got so much hype, you know, the one where they're like, oh, he jumped 7 feet in the air or whatever it was, you know?
Yeah.
It's the exact same thing, but obviously less marketable guy, so nobody cares about that.
You mean the one that Tomori then beat and got no hype about it at
all?
I was wondering
who beat it, but...
Yeah, yeah. But no, he was the one who made the difference. Also, Pioli, you can say he made the subs, or he was forced into certain changes on around about 65 minutes. He made four substitutions. He was going to make three, and then Giroud pulled up clutching his hamstring, so he decided, let's throw Ibra on as well. Ibra missed a chance where he went through on goal, but instantly you could see that we were ticking more after those changes. You know, we were starting to push. We were the team that were going to score the winner at that point. And as I say, Ibra missed that chance. Mathias ran down the left side and cut the ball back to Bakayoko, who saw that shot blocked. You know, he should have had an assist for that. I think Bakayoko should have taken a touch. And then he got the goal that that I think was coming. And it came at the perfect time because Atletico didn't have much time to hit back either, although they did miss a late chance through Cunha, who, you know, should have done better with that at the near post. And that's it. I mean, what a story. You know, we regardless of what we've just seen yesterday, so obviously we're a little bit angry and stuff, but sometimes you've just got to reflect and say that was a very memorable night. It's the kind of nights that we've been missing for these 7 years that we've been outside of the Champions League. You know, a few pundits, and I've seen fans saying it, that we've been starved of these European nights. And it was a classic Milan performance in Europe. Stop them scoring and just make sure you get the only goal. You know, and we've seen it so many times. It was a performance that reminded me a bit of when we won 2-0 away at Bayern Munich in a second leg once, and it was just really effective. You know, we just generated a couple of chances and that was enough to go through. This time it might not be enough for us to go through to the knockout stages. We'll have to see what happens in the last round of games, and obviously we'll preview the Liverpool game in the next episode. But at least it's interesting. At least it keeps us alive. You know, it'll be a sellout against Liverpool now.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be fantastic. And yeah, I'm a little nervous just because of our league fixtures. Are we prioritizing that and when we shouldn't be? You know, I mean, we'll get to that, obviously, with the games we have to recap here. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's the right move. I mean, obviously, we want to go through. Why wouldn't we? If we can, we should absolutely shoot for it. And to be honest, we had our moments against him in the first time, and we obviously had the early game jitters, then went ahead right before the half, and then Jordan Henderson had a world-class screamer that he's never scored another goal like that in his life. So without that, you know, we could be on another point up. And if things went well against Atletico, if we didn't get screwed by that referee in that, then, you know, we could already be talking about us having qualified. So it's not like the performances have been poor outside of the two Porto games. If tides were different, you know, we'd be through already. So I don't see why we wouldn't want to push for it. But if the rotation is going to be affecting us in the league, which is what I think we saw this past weekend, then I don't know if it's the right move going forward. Yeah. I think we should still focus on the league over anything, because we're not winning the Champions League.
I don't know if we prioritized anything this weekend besides playing healthy players.
Yeah, it was called
the condition,
you know, exercise. Yeah.
And, you know, if ties were different, we would have won the Scudetto last season.
Yeah, that's...
That is definitely something, you know, something to be said about the fact that we can now, because we won that game, still pretty realistically finish third in the group and drop into the Europa League. And
that's
that
the part that scares me.
That didn't seem like a realistic possibility going into the, you know, but obviously the results have aligned in such a way that, yes, it keeps us alive going into the sixth group stage game, but also means that, like, we're arguably now lined up to finish third. You know, even if we were to lose against Liverpool, and then I guess a draw would be ideal between Atletico and Porto, but, you know, is what it is. We'll come to that next week, I guess, but to just recap some of the best performances in the game against Atletico, before we do tops and flops, I must say I thought the entire back four were good. It was a blow, you know, not having Tomori again. There was rumours before the game that he was going to be back for that trip, and he wasn't, and he also wasn't back yesterday. But Kieran Romagnoli in this particular game had a pretty tough task of keeping Suarez and Griezmann quiet. Now, neither of them are in free scoring form, it must be said, but they really did keep them quiet. You know, they took a man each and neutralised the attacking threat pretty well, I thought. And the two midfielders did well as well. I mean, Tonali Kessier does seem to be the best two out of the four that we can pick at the moment, when you consider Benacer and Bakayoko as well. And those two did a good job at shielding, because it's so important that we weren't overrun by that 3-5-2 that Atletico play, because they play quite an attacking central midfield three as well. Like Depaul, we've seen what he can do at Udinese when he gets galloping. Lamar, you know, has been a winger for quite a lot of his career. And then Koke, who would normally play probably more advanced if he was in like a 4-2-3-1 or something. So it's quite an attacking midfield three, and we kept them quiet. But yeah, not much going forward. We didn't generate tons of chances. It more came towards the last 20 minutes when Atletico looked tired, as if they'd, you know, put a bit too much time into the press, a bit too much energy into the first half, and not got the rewards. But yeah, anyone stand out?
I mean, not really. Not on their team. Like, they didn't do much, you know? It was just, it was, like you said, we did a great job of subduing them. So there wasn't a whole lot of threat for them. I mean, I don't remember a time that Suarez or Griezmann even were a threat to us. Like, we neutralized their entire team the entire game. I mean, how many shots on target do they have? I genuinely don't remember. They had two, and they went straight at Tata, and he saved them great. You know, I think they were grounded balls right at him, and he just dropped on top.
If I hadn't have done the starting 11s, I think I wouldn't have known that Suarez and Griezmann were playing.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a testament to how quiet we managed to keep them, because we know how they play. They're not Ibra types where they bully their way into games physically. They're movement forwards. We saw that in the first game, you know, where Griezmann nipped in before Romagnoli to that ball, and it was a great volleyed finish, to be honest, even though he should have done better, Romagnoli. And that's how they operate. And against our most static centre-back pairing, if you know, don't count Gabia for this one, then they did well to keep them quiet. I'm just trying to look up.
Which is what makes the Sassuolo game so much more frustrating.
But we had four shots on target compared to their three.
Really? It was that close?
I've got five and two here. Wow. But of course, different stats sites will say different things. Big chances was 2-1 in our favour. And again, that's subjective, I suppose. But we had 15 shots in general to their six.
What was the XG? Okay, maybe that's why I'm thinking. I felt like we really were doing it.
Yeah,
because we had a lot of close shots go wide, and obviously those are off-target shots, so and offside callbacks or whatever. So,
and yeah, so we won, so that was good. Top, I mean,
yeah,
what else to say? The top for me was I was gonna say Romagnoli. I think he had a really, really good game, to be honest, but then it's like recency bias in my head. I'm thinking, don't pick him, because all people would do is then go back and say, well, no, he did this wrong in this game. And
well, there is a person who does that.
Yeah, and they did highlight one mistake in particular, and I think that has swayed me a little bit. So I'm going to go with Tonali in this. I thought Tonali was good in a game that was starved of great forward play from either team. I think Tonali did a good job. The obvious answer is Messias, and I'm leaving that to somebody else.
Yeah, and you know I'm taking it.
That's a layup.
I'm going Messias. There's nothing else to say that hasn't been said. Everyone knows why. So,
I'll go Tata Rosanu. He kept a clean sheet at Atletico. Not an easy thing to do as a 34-year-old backup goalie.
37?
Yeah,
he's 30. I'm 30.
And we're all talking about he's done, he's retired.
No, 35.
Shit, my life is just getting started.
I think of Morante, he's 35, to be fair.
You know what's funny is Kessie got the UEFA man of the match. None of us picked him.
No, Kessie and Tonali were good as a double pivot, and Kessie will get the edge from that because of the assist. And it was a good assist. That's people saying, oh, Kessie got so much praise for a regulation cross. It wasn't. It was an off balance, good cross, left footed into the only place that he could have put it for Messias to score. Yeah. It was a good cross.
Well, and I mean,
regardless
of how difficult or easy or anything, any other adjective you want to give to the cross, it was the only one that connected to someone that scored a goal. So,
right.
Like, it was the moment of quality. It was the one moment of quality.
Without that cross, there's no goal, you know? Like,
and we have no money.
Question for you guys. How do you guys feel about Kessié being captain that game?
Well, Ollie and I kind of touched on it in the last one, I think, last podcast. It doesn't bother me. I think it's just simply we go who's had the most appearances in the starting lineup to get the captain's armband. And it was him.
Yeah, and then obviously Romagnoli took it back against Atletico and kept it yesterday.
Oh, I thought he was captain against Atletico for some reason.
No, it was Fiorentina where he got the captaincy, but it's I think it's just regulation. I think they do it on here who's been here longest in terms of most appearances. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't have been my choice. If I'm going on merit, then I would have gone with Kier, who is the captain of his national team, or I'd have gone with Ibra, who, you know, had his first spell at the club all the way back in 2010, so probably gets it. And he's a leader, you know, out there on the field by example and vocally. But yeah, I think we've just got our way of doing things, and that is the way of doing things. But then I don't know, because how does that work with Calabria, who is supposedly right. the vice captain, but probably doesn't have as many appearances as Kessié?
Maybe he doesn't, but I feel like he's been here long enough. Hmm. Maybe it's just club tenure. Then Romagnoli, because then Romagnoli would be above Kessié. That makes sense.
Yeah, okay, fair. That's it. And the flop of the match, quite a tough one to pick this, because there weren't any awful performances. It's not like the Sassuolo game where we're fighting for who to pick, but probably Giroud.
Yeah.
He got asked to lead the line, which is obviously quite a difficult job against three centre-backs. We were relying on movement from the wingers, and when one of those wingers was Krunic, so that Leao could get some rest, our work was going to be cut out a little bit. Brahim tried playing close to him. Brahim didn't have a great game either. He didn't have a great game yesterday. I think there's some after effects of COVID in him and Teo, because Teo's not been his sharpest either. I've always said that if you get COVID now, it's essentially a one-month absence. They might come back within 2 weeks, which obviously most of the time they do test negative within 2 weeks. Might be vaccinated or whatever, but it's more so the effects of not being in your usual training regime for that fortnight and not being doing game drills and such. I'll go with Giroud. One thing I will say is we're now down to a situation where Ibra is very much being leaned upon because Giroud picked up that injury. So I'm actually
with Leao.
Yeah, it is with Rebic's injury. So it would have been great if Giroud could have stayed fit. But I think that we needed a bit more in this game, and he also looked off to pace.
Yeah, I'm going to kind of scapegoat here and say Sal Makers. It's just consistent bad games from him now, to where none of them are even sticking out as like a bad performance. It's almost like his level has just dropped overall. And this game was no different. I remember him attempting a few chances, attempting to create some stuff, and the balls were just inaccurate. They were going nowhere. The passes were behind everyone, and in some good situations where they could have been, you know, an assist for him or a goal for him, and he just wasn't placing them right. And then once Macias came on, obviously that changed. We started attacking more, and we eventually got a goal. So I'm going to go with him. I think when he came off, the game changed. And I think it's more so his quality than the quality that was brought on that caused that change.
I'm going to go with Giroud. This is who I expected when we signed him, just kind of absent-minded. Not absent-minded, but you don't notice he's on the field, and this is who showed up.
That's the thing, is relying on him getting service, really. Otherwise, he doesn't do an awful lot else. You know, people were talking about him arriving as a vice Ibra, a deputy to Ibra. They actually don't play that similar at all, really. Ibra's the kind of guy who's going to try and grab the game by the scruff of the neck. And on the other hand, would have liked them both fit. Sassuolo.
And I just realized we didn't have the tag up for that entire segment.
That's all right. At least we know now. This is tough, isn't it? To go from such a high to such a low feeling at full time. One thing I will say is that I clocked just around kickoff time. I was like, oh shit, it's an early kickoff. And they never usually end well for us. So I had a bit of an ominous feeling. Felt a lot better when Romagnoli gave us the lead with that good near post header. And then just absolute disaster from there, wasn't it, really? I think the thing that rocked us, we'll just dive straight into it and say it was a 3-1 defeat. Our second home defeat in a row against Sassuolo. They came and beat us in the second half of last season, and that was a pretty damaging one for our Scudetto hopes that were hanging by a thread at that point. Sassuolo have been a bit more up and down this season, but they've still got some good results under their belt. They went to Juve and won, for example, so we knew that the threat was going to be there from them. And I think what killed us in this game was conceding the equaliser so quickly. And if it had been any other goal, then maybe it might have been different mentally. But I think the fact that it came from a mistake, it rocked us big time. Great goal.
I think you could argue that all of their goals came from mistakes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, but it was just a rocket goal. You know.
3 minutes. 3 minutes after we went 1-0 up. It's always going to be tough. I mean, they say you're at your most vulnerable after you've just scored. And, you know, I think that was the case in this game. But, you know, Bakayoko giving the ball away and then the feed through to Scamacca. Great finishing off the far post. Mignan was rooted. What a way to welcome him back into the goal. Yeah, and then that we never got going again after that. And I don't really know why it is. I mean, obviously people have been saying we spent a lot of mental and physical energy to get that win against Atletico. We don't have much option in terms of rotation. And then when we did rotate, we put in two new central midfielders that looked like they'd never kicked a ball before. Not a good day at the office.
I will say Bakayoko started the game off all right. Then as soon as Sassuolo started to press, he just lost it all.
Yeah, the mistake threw him off, you know.
Yeah, I don't think he mentally recovered from that, and it showed. Right. But also, our entire right side of the field was just not good. I mean, we had Florenzi starting, who hasn't really had many minutes this season at all, let alone post-injury. And then you had Bakayoko, who the exact same, hadn't had many minutes, came back from an injury, still hadn't had many minutes. Then you had Salamakers, who I just touched on his performances the last review. All of them been pretty poor. And then Liao's kind of mentally exhausted. He's been playing 90s every time he gets on the pitch. And it was an accumulation of all that. They weren't able to get anything going. Then we did get the go-ahead goal. Obviously, everyone was great hype. The highest of highs for Romagnoli before the lowest of lows later on in the game. But once Bakayoko gave that ball away, made that mistake, I mean, Scamacca's goal was incredible. Scamacca. Switch the C's there. His goal isn't fantastic. Like, I'm not even mad at it. It was more like, damn, Baku, you gave it away. But in my head, I wasn't even worried. I was still like, all right, we're going to do good. Like,
right.
13 minutes in, the first 10, we dominated, you know? It was one lapse of judgment. Like, whatever, you could come back from that. We couldn't. I don't blame Mignan for that one. That was a really tough save. I don't think anyone's making it. I mean, he could have dove, but what for? He wasn't going to get there, you know? He was wrong-footed. He was planted. It is what it is. The second one was the frustrating one for me because Mignan did make a great reflex save with his foot, but Kier was just standing right in front of him. Why are you ever standing right in front of your goalkeeper, especially 2 yards in front of him? Like, people are saying you can't blame him for the own goal because it deflected off the back of him. That's why you can blame him for the own goal. You're never supposed to stand right in front of your goalkeeper. I mean, when you're taking a corner, when you're deflecting a free kick or whatever, goalkeeper angles you so that you're A, not in his way, and B, you cover the spots that he isn't. So when you're level with him, now he can't see what's in front of him, the ball coming at him. And when he does make the save, there's like a 90% chance it's going to hit you in the back, and then it bounces back in, you know? You don't get to choose where you're deflecting that save when it's pinpoint on you that quick at the bottom of your feet, and you just kick a foot out to save it real quick. You don't know where it's going to go, and you just hope that your defenders are then there to help you, not harm you. And that's what happened there. So two mistakes, two goals. And then the third one was a Kessié giveaway, which then led to Berardi. And it's a tough one with Romagnoli because he face planted, and that's pretty embarrassing. I mean,
he got spun inside out. I remember Suso doing something to something similar to I want to say it was Miranda in a derby once, you know, where he took it and then he chopped back and Miranda just hit the deck and then he slotted it in.
It was Messi Boateng. I mean,
yeah,
if it was a higher profile person, this would be everywhere. Everywhere, because it was embarrassing. This was bad. Yeah. It's going to be on the out of context football account, I guarantee, today or tomorrow. It was bad. Probably already.
ESPN's not top 10.
God, I hope not, man. I hope not. My dad watches that. He doesn't watch the games. But he'll see that.
Have you guys seen the viral video where a cop tells a guy to freeze and he just like straight up falls down?
That is
what it reminded me of. He just like, boom.
He didn't even stick his arms out to like shield his fall. He just thunk. It looked like the dead fish celebration from FIFA.
Yeah, it does.
But, you know. I mean,
that's bad. We've gone from Salamakers doing his weird spinning kick thing, hitting Pioli at halftime in the Atletico game to that. We are having a real up and down week on social media, I think it would be fair to say. But yeah, I just want to go back to the second goal and say that the thing that was annoying is, as you said, the manner that it was conceded was bad. Kier shouldn't have been stood there. I think this team, I've done a few tactical analysis pieces this season, and I've noticed that when it comes to set pieces, we get away with a lot because we are really shit at reacting to second balls. The players just stand there flat-footed when there's a second ball to be won inside the box, and we've got away with it quite a lot. We've got away with it especially, this isn't from set pieces, but when players beat someone to the byline and there's a cutback, so often there are players wide open in the box. I think our marking assignments, for whatever reason, do not work. And the reason that I say that is because Kier, I'm not 100% sure on this, but I'm 90% sure that Kier should have been marking Scamaccia from that corner. And he's just watched him tail off into a shooting position, and then he gets to fire, you know, a fairly open shot inside the box from a corner, from about 12 yards out. And then it obviously rebounds off Maignan, Kier, and then in. Really, really sloppy goal to concede. And I can't remember if I put it in the chat or not, but I was thinking in my head at least, we need to equalise before half-time here, because we've spoken so much about how the crowd's been back for us have been a positive thing. But I sensed that the crowd, especially after the equaliser, turned a little bit.
And, they did. And there was
they
whistles.
They sensed the nerves. Yeah. Every misplaced pass that was, you know, that was going out was behind
there
the man.
There were so many. That's what killed us this game, was our passing.
It feels like when we miss early chances, or when we squander early chances, we got into good positions where a ball was a yard behind Ibra, or the cutback was behind Brahim, for example. That happened a couple of times in the opening 20 minutes. Feels like that sets the tone for our performances, because we did the exact same at Fiorentina. You know, we missed early chances. We were generating plenty of them, but when we didn't put them away, you just sort of sensed, oh, typical, they're going to go get one and score it. And, you know, it was a rocket strike for their first real opportunity of the game. Went in, but that knocked our confidence. And from there on in, you know, we really struggled. I mean, is it fatigue? Is it the fact that we brought in five or six new players, was it? I think five outfield players changed from midweek. Is it the sign of some deeper problem? You know, we've conceded seven goals in our last two league games, something we haven't done for 23 years. Where are we with this team? Like, I just don't know what.
I think it's a lot of mental and physical fatigue. You know, like I said, we've been playing a game every 3 to 4 days since, I don't know when it started, the 3 or 4 games ago. And we still have to do it again we're talking about 4 games on this episode. And we're going to do it again next week. Like, there's just so many games back to back to back right now, being in a Scudetto race, being in the potential to go through the round of 16. You know, there's so much riding on this team right now. Let's not forget, they're still very young players. Obviously, we got the old guard as well in there, but those are the guys that are getting physically fatigued. The younger guys are getting mentally fatigued, and it's adding up into all these things. Plus, we have a renewal situation for every player going on right now. There's just a lot going on, and, you know, we could argue all day about, does that affect someone? And the answer is, we don't know. But speculation-wise, yeah, probably. And I think it's starting to show. You know, I don't think Pioli's doing much wrong. Well, I think he got the subs wrong in this game. I thought when he brought Macias on for Diaz, I was like, why is Salamaker still on the pitch? He's not doing anything here. Then Diaz wasn't doing hot either, but I still think that was the wrong move. But
yeah, especially when we were trying to play centrally. Like, if you look at Salamaker's average position in the game, it's actually more over to the left side than what Ibra's was.
Well, and that was the thing. Once Macias came on for Diaz for some reason, then we didn't have anyone in the middle because Salamakers kept inverting the wing. He kept going out left where Leao
was. That
was
clearly an instruction because he did it against Atletico too. And that was in the build-up for the goal. You could see him playing wide left. Weird. I don't know if that was
We switched to like a front four because Leal was playing like a second striker. But then Pellegrini came on as well.
Yeah, and I think that Salamaca's there in that case playing on the left would be so he can cut in to cross and aim at two centre forwards. Mm-hmm. I think you always got a better chance if you're swinging one in rather than. But we never. The supply wasn't there, you know. I feel sorry for Pellegrini because he's played less than 90 cumulative decent minutes, but he's been thrown into some tough situations, you know. And that one in particular was he was kind of feeding off scraps. Masias was the only one to test Consigli in the second half with that low shot after Ibra's flick put him in behind. But nothing clicked at all, which was disappointing after it had clicked for the first 20 minutes, bar that final pass. And I think Pioli said it best. He said he's not worried about the fact that we've lost two games in a row because he thinks the quality is there within the squad for us to bounce back. But he is worried about certain aspects of performances that keep popping up, like being inattentive defensively and making individual errors. That would worry probably any manager. Mm-hmm. This is one of the things. Obviously, it's a negative because there isn't much time to recover energy-wise and to brush off some of that fatigue and, you know, important players are missing important games because they come so thick and fast. But it's also positive. The games come thick and fast. Like, we've got a chance to bounce back from this the day after tomorrow.
Just move on. You know, get it out of your mind.
And get that next win under our belts. And then we can start to build again. Because every time you lose, it's like, do you have the weakest link in America? That game
show? Yeah.
Yeah, where you build up and up. And then if you get an answer wrong, it goes back down to the bottom. It's like, we've got to build that momentum again now. And the way you do that is through wins. You know, I think they are almost two separate competitions at the moment because, if anything, we should have been riding the crest of a wave after beating Atletico Madrid away from home, you know, to stay in the Champions League and then a winnable home game. But the form doesn't always translate.
Maybe a bit of it, knowing that Napoli won and we lost, knowing that they're now 3 points clear at the top, maybe that's kind of a bit of a relief. You know, we're thinking like, this isn't the game to push us through. Now it's just like, maybe we're better at the chase than we are at holding, you know? So maybe this will play in our favor, at least for a few games here. Hopefully, I don't know.
Yeah, and our schedule is still, that Liverpool game aside, obviously, it still looks okay for the next few games. And we should be hopefully racking up 9 points out in the next three games in the league. But obviously it doesn't always happen this way. I mean, I remember at the start of this stretch, you were saying 15 points from the next five, and I didn't disagree with it. Maybe it's you then. You've jinxed this. We're getting none out of 15 now. But yeah, and it goes to show you can't take anything for granted in Serie A, without a doubt. And then that Napoli game, I think it's the penultimate one before the Christmas break.
Yeah.
That is going to be huge. That will be a pace setter. Either they'll be a bit ahead still and it'll be a chance to really open up a margin, or it might be a chance for us to win and leapfrog them again into first and send a message. And, you know, we should hopefully have Rebic back for that. And maybe we'll see. I don't know. Calabria should be back, for example. And I think what these last two league games have shown us is actually who the true immovable players are, the true pillars of this side are. You know, Tomori's one of them. I think Kier and Romagnoli together most of the time aren't going to work. Sometimes they'll have good performances because they've both got experience, but Tomori's our guy. You know, his recovery pace bails both of them out. Teo, when he's on it, is a pillar. When he's not, what's the point? You know, he struggles.
Yeah, he should have been sent off.
Ragged. Yeah, he really should have
been sent off. That was...
Oh, and I must mention that Raspadori should have been sent off as well in the 38th minute for that studs up challenge on Bennacer. I don't care that he pulled out half a second too late, it could have been a nasty injury. It wasn't, because it was more of a glanced contact, but at the same time it was reckless.
He wasn't going for the ball. I mean, yeah, it was poor and clear red card. You could argue that he was being held back, which he was, but that's not the challenge that was being looked at. So It's a red for me. There was also Romagnoli's red card, which
was,
I feel bad because it was an obvious red card. I mean, that was a rugby tackle, but he was the hero and then he had to become the zero. And as the captain, it's not the first time we've seen him make a blatant red card to prevent a goal at the end of a game. He didn't get a red card last time. I can't remember who it was, but he just dove and swatted the ball with his hands, and he just got a yellow card because it was the final second of the game. It's a few years back. I don't remember who we played, but that I just had flashbacks to that, and I was like, man, we should be down to a lot of people. But luckily, Tomori recovered, so that red card is irrelevant because it was going to be Tomori anyway. So
yeah, it was, yeah, and we actually get to sit him for this game, which is good. And Tomori comes back, and it's a massive boost. As I say, he's one of the pillars of this team, definitely. I think we can say the same about Calabria now, safely. It's not that Kalulu's done bad. It's not that Florenzi dropped to 2 out of 10, but he wasn't great. You know, I don't think his position is right back for us moving forward. And Kalulu has been good. He's shown energy, but there are still signs that, you know, he's young. He's a backup. He doesn't have tons of experience. Calabria's our guy. He gives us balance. He knows it's important. He just understands the system better at this stage. We need Rebic. You know, we really are missing somebody who doesn't matter. Like, we're sort of doing the opposite to how Rebic plays at the moment, where we actually play well for large stretches of games, generate chances and don't bury them, whereas Rebic tends to play shit for 60 minutes and then he'll come out of nowhere with an ice cold finish. And that is what we really need at the moment, you know, especially because Leao's blowing out of his
Rebic arm. Does well. Rebic does really well when things are getting mentally tough for the other team because he gets angry. You know, you saw it against Juve multiple times. Every time they would talk smack to him, he'd come back with, you know, an ice cold finish and then a little hush hush. You don't get that from the rest of the boys. You know, the rest of them are like, oh no, we're sad. So they just dwell in it. You know, Rebic is a psycho and he just, he does his thing. So.
Yeah. Tonali at the moment is the undroppable one out of the midfield for key games. God. Kessie keeps making errors that lead to goals.
They all are just so bad.
Yeah. Bakayoko. I agree with Maddie. I thought he was good in the opening part, and I actually think he did well when he came on against Atletico. He offered a bit of something at least. And Bennacer, I mean, wow, he has become quite untidy in possession. He just looks massively out of rhythm. And I know that he prefers to play alongside Kessie. They've got a better understanding. They do work better together. They play narrower, and Bennacer has more of a license then because he trusts his midfield partner more. But I don't know. It's like we've got four options for the double pivot and three of them are out of form at the moment.
Yeah.
And that's quite tough. That is quite tough when we rely on it so much. So Tonali's stock definitely rises after a game like this. And we need Brahim back as well. We need him because when he's struggling, I don't know if he's struggling fitness-wise, only he could tell us that, but when he's struggling to get into games, we essentially are playing with two out of our four forwards because we know Salamakers isn't going to cut in and bang one into the top corner. You know, we're essentially relying on Leao running at his man and Ibra getting into goal scoring positions. And it makes
part of it is everyone just knows if we're going to score a goal, it's coming from the left side, you know? So that's why I think getting someone... Everyone says Salamakers offers a lot defensively, and that's true. But I don't think it matters. I don't think he needs to be offering something defensively. I think he needs to offer something offensively, or else everyone's going to know where we're attacking from, where we're going from. If the ball's on the right side, they're not worried. If it's on the left side, then they're going to double defend, and we're not going through, you know? I think he needs to offer more going forward, and that's why I think Messias should be getting the starts from here on out. I mean...
It's like a chicken and egg thing, isn't it? Like, I would like to see us play a more attacking right winger to see if as you say, it pushes their left side back more. So it's not like we have to have a defensive winger, or if that would make them come onto us more and it would make our right side look worse and unbalanced. We don't know until we see it. But, you know, if Messias does get some starts on the right wing, which I think could be coming at some point, to be honest, then we'll see it. Because
the thing is, though, 30. We can't have Florenzi starting right back because he's an offensive minded and his defense is really, in his age, has gone down. We need to have Kalulu or Calabria back, and Kalulu's done well. So I don't know why Florenzi even got the start, to be honest with you. I would have started Kalulu, but I also would have started Messias, so.
Yeah, I don't know, unless he's just kind of juggling assignments at this stage after the international break. I don't know. It's tough. It's tough, and I think people have... Obviously, it came a few days after his renewal as well, a couple of days after. and we should probably talk about that, actually. He purely signed a one-year contract extension. It wasn't the two that some thought. It's 1 year with an extra year option. So he'll be with us until June 2023, providing nothing goes drastically wrong between now and then, but you never know with football. And it's funny because he signed his last renewal before a game against Sassuolo, but that was the away one when we were in that post-lockdown run. And Ranić looked like he was going to be appointed, and then one night it all fell apart. And it's in the same time frame as Ranić's just been appointed as Man United's new manager. So that shows how mental football is. But can't disagree with the renewal. You know, he has fully earned it. It's been a hell of a journey since he arrived in the early part of the 2019-20 season, when he undid a lot of the damage that Gianpaolo had done. And here we are now. We're fighting on multiple fronts again. Had a little bit of over half a season flirt with the Scudetto last season. This season, people consider us genuine challengers. We're in the Champions League. We're beating Atletico Madrid away. It is a well-earned renewal.
I agree. Yeah,
I don't think anyone says otherwise. I think we're all good there.
Yeah, great. Tops and flops for this, and then we will move on to the preview. I'm going to keep this one very straightforward and say that I think someone else is going to go for Romagnoli here. So I'm going to go for Kessié and say he came on to do a job. And I picked Teo Hernandez, you know, for the Fiorentina game, because he gave the ball away in a terrible position when he didn't need to do it. And that led to the goal that killed off the game. Kessié did the same here. So I have to say, error leading to goal.
I thought you were starting with your cop. And I was
I was very confused.
I was like, let's hear this bullshit.
Is there a top? Sorry, I started with a flop there. I'm going to go with Kessié for flop and for top. This is quite a tough one, isn't it? I don't even know. Were any of the players good?
No, I was going to say, like, well, who scored the goal? And then I was like, oh, the guy that got fucking sent off and face planted, not him.
Yeah, so I thought the same. Kier was the only one out of the back four who didn't have an absolute disaster.
I mean, he had an own goal.
I know, he had an own goal.
None of them, then.
That's what I'm saying. There was no one good. Like, no one was good. And I'm okay with not having a top for this one, to be honest with you. Tonali off the bench might honestly be
maybe Messias
the only legitimate answer. Yeah, Messias wasn't even bad, but he also wasn't good. Mm. Yeah, I'm not going to pick a top, to be honest with you. I'm just going to go.
I don't have a top either.
Yeah, and I'm going to go straight flop. You know? And
I think that, I mean, we joked about
Rosano, you think you concede a goal?
I do want to touch on Maignan a little bit, because I was nervous that he was rushed back. And I think he could have done more on the third goal. I mean, it went right between his legs. You could always do more when that happens. But I thought he did really well on the second goal that we conceded, the Caron goal. I think that was a fantastic reflex save. It's just unfortunate how the rest played out. And I don't think there was anything else he could have done on the first goal. I think that's just kind of, it is what it is.
There was also a save that he had to drop down and use his hands.
Yes.
And I was like, all right, the man's not scared to use his hands. That's a good sign.
But he didn't catch it like I thought he did. He deflected it, and it almost went to someone. So, I mean, he is still a little iffy, but yes, it was a great save.
I think it's because his reaction was a bit late.
Yeah.
I think he was caught somewhere between trying to catch it and trying to parry it.
Pat it, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm not picking him as my top, by the way. You don't get to pick top when you concede three, but I think he did better than I anticipated.
You don't get it.
Yeah,
it was a bright note, definitely, him being back, and he got a good reception from the crowd, and obviously his confidence will build back up with game time. If I was to be picky, I'd say for the second goal he should have better rebound control, but you know, just be picky.
My flop is Bakayoko.
I think that's fair.
He started the entire
beginning and the end was Bakayoko.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, then I'll take the easy route. I'll just go Romagnoli then. Red card.
Yeah.
And faceplant.
Faceplant.
Yeah. Respect. Yeah. Respect. Right. Genoa are Shiba. Again. They have won one game all season. They are really struggling. Not good. I mean,
3-1 for them. Okay.
Yeah, they've already this is what I mean. Do you remember when we played them last season? And was it the first time we dropped points last season?
Yeah, I think so.
When we drew 2-2 in Kalulu.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we did drop points.
And Genoa had a pretty torrid start to the season. Well, get ready for it to repeat again. That's all I'll say. I watched Genoa because they played yesterday afternoon, I think it was. Or was it before us they played?
I'm surprised. It was before us.
Yeah, they played away at Udinese and they got battered for 90 minutes and somehow came away with a 0-0 draw. Sheva's got his work cut out, not only because he's inheriting a team that are pretty damaged psychologically, but also they got a lot of injuries.
And an ownership that will get a new manager after 3 weeks.
And it's apparently so going after Pulisic in January. So.
I know, yeah. They can't afford that. Like, what are they?
I will go through their injuries. So centre-back Maximovic is out. Crisquito, the full-back's out. Casata, midfielder's out. Mike Fares is out. Winger Felipe Caicedo's out. Mattia Destro, who obviously has a tendency to score against us, is out, and potentially Yaya Kallon as well, who I can't say I'm too familiar with. That's quite a few injuries, but as we saw with the Fiorentina game, that doesn't necessarily guarantee success.
I think this one's going to be actually better for us because it's not all in one department. You know, it's spread out, so they're going to have mixed match everywhere, and I think that plays more into our hand. I mean, we saw our entire right side was swapped out this game, and it hurt us in each department of the field. So I think it's a lot harder to build when you have attackers, midfielders, and defenders missing, whereas Fiorentina just had defenders missing. So it was the entire second string, so they all know each other. So it was essentially just a worse version of starters, but they had the consistency, and they were able to work it. But I don't think it's going to be the same. Plus, Genoa was just a rancid team. They're really poor. I don't know what Sheva was thinking going from Ukraine to that. I think that's a huge step down, and that says something.
Yeah.
He's doing his work experience, mate.
Yeah. As long as he doesn't come to us next.
Destro is the top scorer for them with 6, but also Crisito has 6, and Fares has 2. Everybody else is on 1 goal or less. So that's their 3 top scorers that are probably out.
I mean, our top scorer doesn't even have 6, so there's that, right? Zlatan's on 5?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
we're crap. Right.
But we have a lot more goal scorers and doubles.
We actually have 11 players who have scored a goal this season, which is the joint most out of any Italian team. So it's good news. It's got to be a win, hasn't it? You know,
it
has to be a bounce back. And if it isn't, then we can worry because we'll have gone winless in 4 in the league. And it's in supposedly one of our favourable stretches.
It's funny.
We get the win. I do think we get the
win.
Don't
even say it, AJ. I know exactly what you're going to say. I was about to say the same thing, I think.
Go on. Well, we're about to find out. I'm saying it anyways. Pioli got manager of the month month for all wins, and now he's going to get flop of the month. He's getting the Tapir Dior or whatever.
I would say the Derby kind of changed our direction last season, and it's our direction this season.
Actually thought we did good in the Derby this year, but
we didn't win. So
and Inter's been on a run. I mean, right. It's no longer exactly a 2-horse race; it's now a 4-horse race. Remember, you and I were talking before the game, and I was like a little nervous that Atalanta's beating Juve because now, it's the same amount of points to drop from 4th than it would be to 3rd, and you're like, we're gonna bring it back to 7 tomorrow. Don't worry. Nope. Didn't it?
No, we did not.
I think Inter's about to sneak into first here if we drop again pretty soon.
Well, some people thought that they were
Napoli will have to drop as well.
I said they were in Europe.
I don't want to be that guy, but one of them's on this call.
I went back and watched that episode. I wanted to see my season predictions because mine and Maddie's weren't included in the article. So I can go watch the podcast again. I'm glad they weren't in the article. I'll leave it at that.
I'm going to go back and edit it in now. I'll expose you. Prediction for this, then, to expose ourselves again. I phrased that terribly.
I'm going to say 1-0.
For who?
Genoa. Okay. I'm sorry, for us. We're going to win 1-0.
Gotcha.
2-0 to us.
3-1 us. I think we're getting back in it.
Yeah,
going 12 out of 15 here. That's all.
I think we're going to get 9 points from our next three games.
I think we're going to stuff Liverpool. I don't know why I said that.
I kind of do, but we'll catch on that next week.
I kind of do too.
Yeah, I don't know why I'm riding this high, man.
No. We're going to lose against Liverpool. Let's save that for next week. We play 18th on Wednesday. We play 20th on Saturday. We all, I think, picked Salernitana to get relegated in our preseason predictions. They have struggled a little bit in their first season back in the top flight of Italian football. They've stuck by their manager, at least, Stefano Colantuono, who did a good job getting them promoted, obviously. I don't think they were one of the favourites last season. But, you know, they've struggled. They've actually won more games than Genoa, and they beat Genoa earlier this season. But they have lost a lot of games as well. They've lost 10 out of their opening 14. They've scored only 11 goals in those 14 games. They've conceded 29, so they've got the worst goal difference in the league.
They play Juve tomorrow, so they're about to get a win. I actually said over the summer that I think they were one of the few Serie A teams that actually improved their squad over the offseason. Obviously, it wasn't enough. But I think Simi's still good. He hasn't had the same season.
Good signing for them, was that, really?
Pellegrini out for 30 to 40 days. Might miss Milan game. Cool. Just got that up there right now. But, well, it's in your chat, so. I mean, we're going to crush them. I'm not worried about this at all. This is, if we drop any points in this game, then there's a problem. And we'll leave it at that.
They've got a player called Giuseppe Fella.
That's
F-E-L-L-A.
That is the made-up name you would see in a Broadway school musical production of, like, The Godfather. You'd see a guy called Giuseppe Fella.
Of which you have watched so many in your time here on Earth.
Yeah.
And they've also got Joe Lobby, who used to play for Inter.
Right.
And scored against us in the derby. So.
Yeah, but I'm not too worried about that.
Yeah.
But, who else? They have Ribery as well, don't they?
Did he?
I think he went there after Fiorentina. I could be wrong. I know he went to like a.
I think he was.
No bueno.
Rumored, but I don't think he's. Is he even playing anymore?
Yeah, he's still playing. Let me Ribery.
I just say he plays for Salernitana, but he's not on the squad list.
Oh, he's injured. So, knee injury. Expected return mid-December. Okay.
Okay. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why then.
But he's played 9 matches, 2 assists. Overall rating is 6, so he's not been too hot.
Oh, he is 30-odd, isn't he? He really is.
He's younger than Zlatan.
Oh, God.
That's the barometer.
Should have signed him when Gattuso wanted him.
Honestly, yeah, he did good that one season.
He did with Fiorentina. He ripped us apart in that 3-1 game. I'm going to say that we are going to respond to our recent negative defensive record with another clean sheet, and we are going to win the next two games 2-0.
Does that include your Genoa game?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, I think this is probably a 2-0. Or actually, I think it's going to be a bit harder than we think, so I'm going to go 1-0, but we're still going to win.
I'm going to go 1-0 as well. Because I think whenever we play the bottom teams, we never, like, thrash them. We always struggle a bit.
We come in with this mentality that we're better than them, and then as soon as there's any adversity, we go, oh, no, and then we stop.
The dog is screaming, so I have to take him outside. This happens every fucking podcast, dude. It pisses me off.
Okay. Should we just move on to questions then? Because we only have a few minutes, anyways.
Just wrap it up.
Yeah.
let's do some questions pretty quickly then. Good Rullet asks: is the excuse for Keith that his contract is running out overused? Other clubs' players still bring the same performances as last year when their contracts are running out. And that some are even younger than him. Did he reach his potential last season? Or is it that the others have surpassed him? A few questions loaded into one there.
And I didn't hear the first half of it. You were cutting out. Whose contract is
Kessié?
Kessié's contract is towards the end, so we're wondering if that's not an excuse for his performance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not an excuse. You have to maintain professionalism and your standard, especially when you're looking for a renewal. When you're asking for the money that his agent is supposedly asking for, you got to play out of your mind and because another team's not going to pick you up on a free if you're playing bad too. They're gonna be like, well, why do we want this guy? He can't even perform for the club that gave him the chance.
They'll pick him up. They just won't pay him the $9 million that he's asking for.
You're not on the screen, so you don't get to talk right now.
that's true. And also, you know, it's a free transfer, but in quotes, because, like, you know, you're essentially having to pay his agent a fair bit in commission as well. Mm-hmm. And they might think it's not worth the risk. But it's not an excuse. It's not a reason. I still don't subscribe to this idea that when you take to the field as a professional athlete, you are thinking about your contract situation when you're playing a pass or when you shut it out. I mean, you're just not thinking about anything else other than getting through that game. And also, it shouldn't be a negative distraction if it is a distraction, because he should be playing to put himself in the shop window. He should be playing to prove that he's worth the money. I think there is a chance that he peaked last season. However, I still think that obviously there have been glimpses this season of him getting back to those levels. So it could be that, you know, he's still suffering a little bit from the after effects of that muscle problem that he had. But also, he hasn't really had the same consistency in partner. You know, the mm-hmm. midfield has chopped and changed a fair bit more this season. It's something to monitor between now and January. That's one thing I will say. He needs to pick it up and he needs to cut those errors out of his game, because if there was anyone scouting him on Saturday, Sunday afternoon, then they won't fancy that, you know?
Yeah.
Next question from Abhijit Mohan. I've probably butchered that. Apologies if I have. If we're knocked out of the Champions League, is it likely that the management might not reinforce the squad in the winter and consider it deep enough for the one tournament that went in?
Not after the last few performances. I think they know we got to get some. No, they might say we don't have the funds to do anything unless we go through, and that might be the justification, but there's no way they think we're deep enough. There's absolutely no way.
I think
we might make emergency signings.
Yeah, I think that we might bring in a few players on loan with option. But again, if we don't get to the round of 16, but if we do get to the round of 16, I think we sign some.
It's interesting to remember that if we were to get through to the knockout stages of the Champions League, we would be guaranteed a minimum of 58 million euros from our Champions League campaign. That is Vlahovic money right there.
Yeah.
You know? That's the difference that these things make. And I think that's why there's never been a narrative from anybody that we'll stop fighting to try and get to the knockouts, because while it's still there, you've got to fight for it.
It can
really change the course of the future of the club. And I think Maldini said that, you know, he said we need 3 or 4 years of being in the Champions League and getting the revenues from it before we can make really big investments again. So I still don't expect us to go out and spend big money in January. And I think that if anything, January... Yeah, we got the last January transfer window wrong, I think, Tomori aside. They call it the repair market, and I think we rushed into it when we needed guarantees. Bringing in Mandzukic and Mete didn't really give that, even though Mete wasn't horrendous by any stretch. I think we just needed something a bit different. And this year, we can't panic again and make the same mistakes. There might be opportunities, like I think Ferver's name we'll keep hearing, and maybe Alvarez and others, those names will keep coming up. But I expect it to be a case of, let's see what kind of a situation we're in with injuries come January. Let's see if Messias has kept up. Messias. I've called him about 5 different things in this episode. But yeah, let's see how he performs between now and then, and we'll see.
Maybe we just recall Adley. You know, that could be our move.
Yeah, that's been talked about. That has been talked about.
Can we do that?
Yeah, of course. He's our player. I know we said, like, yeah, we want to sign him and loan him right back out. And it'd there be a little crappy to do it, but we could do it.
There could be a financial penalty for doing it. But yeah, as AJ says, he's our player. I find it funny that some loan moves have no recall clauses in them. It's like, if you're the parent club, you're getting pretty bent over by that.
Yeah,
you know, you should always include a recall clause. That's why I think that, you know, if we were to like sign another centre back, I would loan Gabir out for consistent playing time, but just include an anytime recall clause. So if we are in a crisis, we could call upon him again.
But, right.
Osney asks, could Kalulu be the right backup for Tomori? In these situations where Kier and Romagnoli have not looked good together, I see this being suggested more and more. Play Kalulu as a centre back because, you know, recovery pace and stuff. No, I'm going to say no. I don't like Kalulu at centre back.
Yeah, I think it's only an option if Calabria is back because I don't think Florenzi's enough defensively. So I think Kalulu needs to be the starter until Calabria is back. And then when Calabria is back, maybe you could throw Kalulu as a center back in emergency situations, but I wouldn't mess. I mean, we all said he shouldn't be playing on the left. I don't think he should be playing in the middle either. He should be on the right side.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah, all good. Casper, how many years do you think Zlatan has left in him?
Morbid. In his life?
Morbid. A morbid question. I honestly think that this might be conditioned by how Sweden do. If Sweden get knocked out in the playoffs, because it's March, is the playoffs. So I think that, you know, if they get knocked out and there's no chance of being at the 2022 World Cup, he might think, I've given all that I can. There's nothing really to fight for anymore.
Yeah, but I think that also, if we're like, hey, we want to sign Vlahovic, or however the hell you say his name.
Vlahovic.
Yeah.
Just disrespecting the league's top scorer there.
Vlahovic or whatever.
Susan. Yeah.
Still having Ibra on the squad is like, will help bring him here, you know?
Yeah.
I think that is a point.
If he's willing to be a backup.
Well, he won't be a backup to Ibra because Ibra's playing every five games. Well,
no, that's what I'm saying. If Ibra is willing to be a backup.
Oh, I think he will be. I think at 41, he knows he's not going to be the starter.
Is there such a thing as a backup anymore? Because we've rotated Ibra and Giroud horses for courses.
Not for us. But...
Yeah. I think that he would be a factor if we did try and sign Vlahovic. I mean, Vlahovic did an interview with a Serbian paper where he basically said that he had a conversation with Ibra after the game, the 4-3 game. He signed his shirt again. He said something to him in Serbian. He considers him his idol, and he doesn't think that he's sort of worthy to be his successor just yet. All really good words. And then there was a Florence-based newspaper that said Ibra's told our management that he thinks he's the guy. There are certain things that add up, but it's the money side of things. You know, it's where we can afford to sign him, because Fiorentina are just going to sell to the highest bidder. They don't have any regard for Vlahovic at this point anymore.
Well, and Rocco's not too fond of us either, because he tried to buy us and we said no. You know, obviously that was a different management, but yeah.
Yeah, but that was with Young Hung Lee, and he was, you know,
a friend of the podcast.
A great man, a man of honor. One more question, then wrap it up. Rocky Award, this is a good one. Psychology states that young people before the age of 26 are very inconsistent mentally because their brain is still developing. Maddie's, what, 30? And he's still developing. You can't win consistently with a team of under 26s. Look at Leipzig, Lille, Dortmund, all suffering from inconsistency now and used to be proof of concept of our ideas. That's more of a point than a question, but it is interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I've always said youth is not the answer, that you need to mix it both. And we've always shown that when we have the youngest team in Europe, you might have some great streaks, but you're not going to win it. You know, you need experience. You need that mentality. You need people who are going to be able to bounce back after defeat, who are able to push forward and still give their all always. And you know, it's not like, don't sign every 40-year-old in the world. Zlatan's an exception to every rule, but, you know, get some guys that have won stuff. And I think that, I mean, we saw it. It transformed us under Pioli's first season when we brought in Kier and Zlatan and, you know, continuing that thing. Macias, he was the only one who was able to fight back against Atletico. He's in his 30s and he's mentally, or not physically, a very young athlete because of how late his career began. So he still has that mental aspect of, look, we're men, we need to play like it, not kids. We're not going to get patted on the back, you know? Right. Yeah. He's overcome adversity. He knows what it's like. So we got to get more people like that. Obviously a whole team of 35-year-olds is not going to cut it either. You know, there's a happy medium somewhere in there, and it's up to us to find it. But yeah, can't go all young.
I might be looking too deep into this, but I just noted last season that our squad was two extremes. We had a really young core of players, 21, 22, and then we had the guys who were into their 30s. there weren't many players who were what you'd consider to be in their prime years of being 26 to 30. It was two ends of the spectrum.
Right.
I think that we've paired for that a little bit because the older guys get injured, the younger guys can't always carry the burden because they're not used to being in pressure situations. And I can understand the point about the, you know, the psychology of it, the fact that other teams will struggle with inconsistency. And maybe we are starting to struggle with it a little bit now. We'll see in the next few games. But I then find it funny that the players that we've gone out and signed who were like, you know, 29, 30, they haven't exactly turned out well. Let's put it that way. So perhaps there's something to be said with the recruitment. We need to recruit players that are of that middle age, who are in their prime, who are experienced, but at the same time can offer physical guarantees, can give us 30-plus games a season. And that might be the way that we go about building quality depth from here on. But it's easier said than done. It is easier said than done because these players obviously are often commanding wages that are the highest of their career because they've got that one more contract in them. I don't know. Be an interesting January, be an interesting next summer, depending on where we finish. And I guess we will finish the podcast here as well. Thank you very much if you made it this far, over an hour again. Brilliant. We'll be back next week to recap two games and preview two more. They're coming thick and fast at the moment. But I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. Find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher. It's on the screen if you're watching on YouTube. AJ, thank you for joining.
Yeah, here as always, I'm Torgard45. And Maddie, thanks for coming back.
Yeah, it was great to be back. Edward_Tove.
Thank you, everyone. We will catch you in a week's time.
Ante, eccolo Ante in area di rigore, Ante, Ibra, gol! Vediamo se è buono, ce lo dà buono, ce lo dà buono, ce lo dà buono!